This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts. Afternoon today, I'm talking picnics, dairies, ice cream, and I'm revisiting an interview I did not so long ago with the lovely Miguel Maestra, the crazy bull himself. So stay tuned, we're going to send you to the Peninsula perhaps with some tickets of your own. Hello, yes indeed, we are talking cravings. It's 6.5 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. We weren't with you last week, of course, an extra word-for-word Mardi Gras broadcast, and I was a little crook the week before. So it's nice to be back with your company on a Saturday afternoon, and I want to get straight into it because coming up next Sunday is the Peninsula Picnic. It is a huge event, the second of its kind, running down there on the Mornington Peninsula. David Strong is the man behind it all. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good to have your company. A bit of a plug for you before we do this. The Peninsula Picnic, we have a double pass to give you. Not you, David, to somebody else who's not involved with the festival. It's worth $157, and after a sold-out inaugural event last year, the Peninsula's most extensive food, wine and music gathering is returning next Sunday, March 20. To win, you have to be a Joy member, not have won a prize in the last 7 days. And thanks to the Peninsula Picnic, you can simply win this by telling us how many bottles of champagne you need for the perfect picnic. David, how many bottles of champagne would you need to make it the perfect picnic?
Picnic on the day, I think we do about 180, but I don't know how many you're personally going to consume.
Me personally, I'm a guts. Let's just make that abundantly clear that I need a lot of champagne to get me through most things. I shouldn't say that. But yes, I would take a lot of champagne to a picnic like this. But of course you won't need to because you've got wineries going on down there left, right and centre at the picnic.
Yeah, we've got 7 of the Peninsula's best wineries and 12 of the Peninsula's probably best restaurants. And some of them cross over. So Montalto comes on site and we have both their restaurant and their winery, and same with Merrick's and Pringer as well. So it's a beautiful combination. And so on site you can get 7 of the wineries are serving and sampling and tasting, and we serve everything out of glass, which is a really nice treat for people who like to be treated like adults.
Plastic, yes.
And then we also have extensive, you know, cocktail bars and other drinks available, but the wine is really a feature of the day.
So how did it all come about?
I guess we were looking around the peninsula and just going, an amazing regional destination, and it has such, you know, beautiful food and wine, and there isn't really a major event down there that brings it all together in one place. So we developed the Peninsula Picnic and, you know, made a festival that we'd want to go to. Something for people who love food and wine but also love music and want to go out during the day.
I mean that's the joy of the Mornington Peninsula. You are blessed with extraordinary wineries and restaurants and chefs and talent down there. Putting that together with a bit of music and making it a nice big picnic is a sensible idea. How's the weather looking? You've done the long-range forecast?
At the moment, we're looking like 26, which would be great. Last year, we had 27 and perfect blue skies. Like, we were absolutely blessed by the gods and hoping to get blessed again.
Some of the challenges you face as a, you know, you're semi-regional, I guess. Most people know you can be down to the peninsula in an hour or from most parts of town. What are some of the challenges you face in getting people down to festivals like yours?
We're actually only 50 minutes from the city at the moment.
It's an hour from my place, let's be selfish.
The biggest challenge at the moment is our competition with the Grand Prix, who moved their dates last year. We hope that our audience is probably a little bit different to the Grand Prix audience.
Well, there's a great many people who cannot wait to get out of town because the Grand Prix is on. Me being one of them, I detest the Grand Prix. So, you know, any excuse to be away from Melbourne CBD while that's happening is a good excuse as far as my mind goes.
And I guess, too, for us, people come to the Peninsula Picnic wanting to drink food and wine, so they've got to be able to get transport home too, or ideally they've got, you know, accommodation down there. So I guess that's another challenge for us because we do pull a big percentage of our audience from Melbourne.
Yes.
It's not all Peninsula people, yeah.
Hey, David, we've had an entry already. Chris and Daniel are listening. They're out in Melbourne's northern suburbs, so we perhaps say an hour and 10 minutes for them. You would need a minimum of one per person, another half dozen to share around, depending on the size of the picnic. I want to go to a picnic with these guys. So one per person, so I'm allowed a bottle of champagne for me, one for everybody else, and then another half dozen to share around, which means I get to probably drink two or three bottles of champagne. Good on you, Chris and Daniel. Thank you for your message. You're in the draw to win that double pass to be at the Peninsula Picnic next week. And clearly they don't like the Grand Prix either.
Clearly they don't like it.
You, as I said, you're blessed with talent down there. It's one of the very good things about the Peninsula. Obviously the businesses down there are keen to be involved and be part of the promotion of their businesses through the festival.
Yeah, look, to be honest, first year it was a sell to get them on site and to get a level of trust with all the businesses down there that this would be something beautiful and worth participating in. But year two, every person who participated in year one is back.
And more, I'm assuming.
And more. So, yeah, we've added another few restaurants and we've also added another few wineries. And we also do a whole artisan area with local art. And we do a whole producers area, which is all local producers coming on site. And we also have added a desserts area this year, so we've got specialist desserts on site as well.
Oh, who's doing your desserts?
At the moment, we have, like, Johnny Ripe doing a whole section down there, which is all, like, Johnny Ripe pies and donuts and stuff, supported by some of the staff at the MRC down there, the sort of executive chef down there, Julian Robert Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be really beautiful.
And musically...
Also, Pope Jones, very famous.
Oh, we love Pope Jones. Matt Wilkinson is a very dear friend of this program, and we're always delighted to support anything that Matt's involved in. Likewise, Ian Curley, who I think is also a part of the program, is he not?
Ian is. Ian brings the sort of treats of the European down there, and this is his second year down there, which is also going to be amazing.
Excellent. And musically, people won't be short of wonderful music. You've got Ruby Whiting down there, Timberwolf, who I believe spoke to Saturday Magazine this morning, Darren Middleton from Powderfinger, Kim Churchill, a very talented artist, and, of course, the delightful Missy Higgins.
Yes, and I guess for people who follow Missy, she's just, you know, launched that new amazing track she did.
Which is extraordinary, called O Canada, which is it's not the Canadian national anthem. In fact, it's a beautiful song about a Syrian asylum seeker, Aylan Kurdi, who was 3 years old when he was, sadly became an international news headline. It's a beautiful song, a beautiful story she tells in that song.
Yeah, and I think this is your, in terms of her Victorian shows, this is your last opportunity for a while to see her, so.
Well, we shall remind
people who love her, it's a great opportunity to get down there.
We shall remind people, David, that we are giving away a double pass on this very program between now and 2 o'clock, thanks to the good folk at the Peninsula Picnic. That's actually the guy we're talking to. The double pass is worth $157, and you, after the sold-out inaugural event, the Mornington Peninsula's most extensive food, wine and music gathering is returning March 20, next Sunday, with a bigger lineup, a larger site, more gourmet restaurants, decadent wineries, fresh local produce and quality artisan wares. Music lineup, as I've just mentioned, Ruby Whiting, Timberwolf, Darren Middleton, Kim Churchill and Missy Higgins. To win, you have to be a Joy member, not have won a prize in the last 7 days. Thank you to the Peninsula Picnic. You can simply win this by telling us how many bottles of champagne you need for the perfect picnic. 0427-JOY-949, 0427-569-949. You can email us on air at joy.org.au. You can send a tweet to CravingsJoy949, or if you have the Joy app, you can enter via that as well. So many ways to enter this. David, good luck for next Sunday. I'm sure it's going to be a glorious day.
Thanks so much for having us, and I hope to see you all there.
An absolute pleasure. That's David Strong from the Mornington Peninsula Picnic, just called the Peninsula Picnic. He's putting that together next Sunday, the 20th of this very fine month of March. Good to talk to you, David. Thank you.
Thanks.
Coming up very shortly, I'm bringing you Miguel again. You know, you've heard of B1 again. This is Miguel again. For those of you who missed this chat we had a little while ago with Miguel, you're going to hear it again. It's all about the Grampians Grape Escape, another regional food and wine festival. You are here on Joy 94.9. It's 1:15.
Hi, I'm Manny Fidel, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Lovely Saturday afternoon. Good to be with you here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. As I promised, I have a superstar in my studio this week. The Grampians Grape Escape Festival was launched, the 25th Grampians Grape Escape. I need to be very clear that I'm a board member, so there is an interest in the escape. It's a not-for-profit role, so, you know, my behaviour is all above board. I have done this in years past as well, so let's just make that all very clear. The important stuff is out the way. The festival ambassador for this year, the chef ambassador, he is somebody we've had the pleasure of meeting before, and I'm delighted to have him in the studio again. Miguel Maestro, welcome.
Hola, hola, ¿cómo estás? I love your little ad when Manu's voice was advertising it. And probably my accent is a little bit thicker, so I don't think anybody is going to understand anything of this interview.
Well, we'll just have to speak nice and slowly. Of course, people will know you, I guess, mostly of late from the living room.
Mm-hmm.
How does a chef become a TV star?
Well, I'm not a TV star. I'm just a humble chef trying to make a living. Come on, I hate that TV star and celebrity crap.
Well, haven't you been nominated for Logie?
Yeah, we actually won a Logie last year, so we won it. But
well, that makes you a bona fide TV star in Australia.
It's just, I believe, you know, cooking has got so many paths that you can follow. And, you know, it's very hard to have 5 jobs at the same time. So I make my choice when the living room come on board and dedicate full time to my media career. And yes, it's working fantastic for me.
Excellent.
How can you be in the restaurant cooking and in TV working?
Well, it works for others.
I just can't do it. I'm just a simple man. I like to cook paellas. And if I don't have the time to cook paellas, I'm just in the TV entertaining you.
Excellent. So can we look forward to Miguel in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here?
No way. No way.
Why not, my friend? Why not?
Do you really? I can't. I got 2 little children. I need to spend time with them. And, you know, I got a job. And
you could be like Warnie out there having a couple of ciggies.
You know, if I was in that show, I'd be all the time trying to hunt some rabbits or something, because I'll be really hungry. I'll be looking in the bush, trying to hunt everything is alive, to put it in the stove.
Exactly, exactly. So, how did the living room come about? Because there was, you know, there's a whole stack of chefs that could have been chosen. Did you have to screen test for it, or did they just say we want you?
So they called me, obviously, for the production company, WDFN. That does other well-known shows like Bon Appétit. And they said, Miguel, we have a screen test. We need to make sure that you're the right person for this job. And they seat me in a room with Amanda Keller.
Yes.
Dr. Chris.
Yeah, the gringo.
And Barry Dubois.
Yes.
And we sit in this room and we start to get topics. People ask us things about life, and we were all so different, but we just click. Like, it was like glue as soon as we walk in the room. And, you know, I didn't know that I was going to get the job, because I was quite, you know, I thought maybe another really famous chef get this job.
Well, somebody who actually has a command of the English language.
And they say, in 2 weeks, we'll give you a call.
Yep.
And the next day they called me, and it was one of the most exciting days of my life. Mm-hmm. They said, Miguel, we want you to be a part of the team. And, you know, from there to now, we were that small show on Friday nights, and now we are the living room.
And it's a fantastic show, and you get to work with very cool people. I think Amanda Keller is, and there's a reason she's the highest paid female radio star in this country, because I think she is a genius. She's very funny, and she appeals to a whole lot of the middle ground as far as her sense of humor goes. She's very sharp. Is she good fun to work with?
She's very snappy. She's mm-hmm. very fast. She's funny. She's got the gift of television, the gift of radio. She's a great mother. And you know, Amanda, since I started working in the living room, I learned so much about, like, just TV itself, like and how to work in a group and how to present things and how to be yourself. Amanda is an amazing mentor almost to follow up in this TV career. And, you know, it's just an amazing woman. She'll be always the same in front of the camera, off the camera, on the microphone, on the wireless. Like, she is bulletproof, and she's an inspiration for me to take after. It's pretty amazing.
She is a cracking woman, and I've had the pleasure of meeting her a number of times in the past. She's just whip sharp. The moment you throw something in front of her, and I think the Gringo's little romance that he's having in Africa is a little bit the same, Julia. She's also very sharp. You formed a really, there's a wonderful bromance between you and Chris.
So Gringo and I, you know, if I tell you the first trip we ever done when we went to South America that we didn't know anything about each other, and the last trip we did to Canada is absolutely totally different. Like, yeah. Gringo is one of my best mates. He knows my family. My family loves him. He's a great guy. It's like we met in a computer program. He's a good-looking guy. He's tall. He's intelligent.
Yeah, I know.
He's eloquent. He's really fit.
He's super funny.
He's everything I am not. And that's why we're such a compliment. We compliment each other in such a many different ways. And since I met Gringo, this is very special, very romantic. Since I met Gringo, my life changed. Since I met him, we discovered this really good vibrancy that we were together. Mm. And, you know, it just works for us. But don't forget about Barry. Barry's hair.
Well, that's just where I was going to, because whilst you and Gringo have your bromance and Amanda's just flirting with you all, there sits Barry, who is almost this strange voice of reason in amongst the four of you.
Barry is the most inspiring person ever. He's a story of success. He's a strong person, but Barry's got the best hair in the business.
He does.
That hair is like 25% of our budget in the show goes to fix that hair every day.
Really?
Six people work full time making sure that every wave is just perfect. When I'm going to tell you a story, please let me tell you something. Like, when we have one of the Barry's friends from his youth, they came to watch the studio.
Yeah.
And out of the surprise, we asked him, how was Barry when he was younger? And they told us that Barry's nickname was Barry Blow Wave, because his hair was just like Bondi Beach, just like a wave.
That's very, very funny. So you obviously all gel as a team, and how much input how much of the decision making do you get to put forward for the food segment?
Oh, like, we got an amazing team. Virginia is our executive producer, and Phil Tanner is our series producer. And we got a lot of producers that we all brainstorm together, like Lisa, we got Anita, James, and the cameraman. We all work as a solid team. So I come up with an idea, or the researchers will come with an idea, and we'll slowly chew, and we making sure that it's going to be fun, that it's going to be information, and at the end of the day, we just do the story, and it's the team that makes the show. So I'm just the guy in front of the camera. It's like our producers, our cameramen, like Toby and Phil, our soundies, Jason, and, you know, Jimmy, Gentle Fingers.
Sounding remarkably like a Logie's acceptance speech.
Because it's terrible. Always everybody takes the credit. You know, our part in the show is just being the face.
We're like the puppets.
Yeah, yeah. And bring, you know, the spice a little bit to the recipe. But it's a lot of components to the recipe, and that people make a great show.
Do you miss running restaurants? Do you miss being in that sort of cut and thrust of a kitchen where there is the pressure? I'm reading a book at the moment by Grant Achatz, the chef from Alania in Chicago. Half of his decision-making was around that sort of very intense, very exciting part of a food service that you do at lunch or dinner or breakfast.
12 to 3, 6 to 9.
Exactly. Or maybe even later. Do you miss that part of your career, or is this next part the perfect sort of follow-on?
I miss it every day. Like, I've done it for 17 years of my life. You put my cooking career versus my TV career, my cooking career is bigger. But, like, the thing is, you fill that gaps with something else. I miss service. I can still hear the docking machine on Saturday nights when I go to sleep. Like, I can still hear that. I can still feel useless on Sunday when I'm not doing the ordering at home. It's weird. It's really when I'm not writing the rosters. But you fill that gaps with something different. You fill that gaps with my new business or my import-export business, or you fill that gaps with my family, like my kids, or you fill that gaps with, you know, more cooking demonstrations, going to the Grampians. Like, you fill that gaps with different things. So you're still cooking, but I don't miss it. You know, you this that adrenaline, that routine, that style of life, you do
it's
all
so
your life.
It's so much a part of what you do.
Yeah.
Do you still eat really quickly?
No, I'm actually like a really, I like to cook something. I'm not such a good eater when I'm eating with everyone because I've been eating for a whole hour when I was cooking.
Yeah, I'm
so,
the same.
So when I arrive, I say, Miguel, are you not having anything? I think, you know, I actually ate more than you.
I just sort of wondered, my husband is a chef. I'm a chef by trade. We eat really quickly. Like, we do these things really quickly because in hospitality time, you only have 6 minutes or 8 minutes or 10 minutes, somewhere between a lunch service, a mise en place, and dinner service to eat. So I still eat quickly. He eats far more quickly than I do. Do you have little habits like that that you just can't get rid of?
Well, I cannot get rid of my tidiness. I'm a little bit of a clean freak.
Yeah,
so I'll be scrubbing. No, sometimes Sasha, my wife, is like, Miguel, what are you doing? I just cook something like a pie in the oven, and I just pulling apart the whole oven, scrubbing, you know, and I'm cleaning, and Sasha is like, you just cook some scrambled eggs, and I'm just pulling apart the whole place, and just, I like things clean, tidy.
And that's another habit, though, from running kitchens, that you have to leave the kitchen clean because you may not be the next person that cooks in it.
Yeah, I love it. White, clean, shiny, beautiful. Just a little bit of freak, yeah.
No, that's okay. Miguel Maestri is my guest. He is, of course, from The Living Room on Channel 10. You can sit with him and enjoy his food every Friday night with Amanda Keller, Barry Dubois, and the lovely Dr. Chris Brown. Yes, and those of you who are asking, haven't we heard this before? I did preface at the top of the program that we were going to revisit this interview because there's a number of people have asked me to. That's really why I'm playing it. We are talking about festivals today. Miguel is the ambassador for the Grampians Grape Escape Festival. We've just been talking about the Peninsula Picnic next Sunday, and when we finish this replay of this interview, we'll be speaking with Natalie O'Brien from the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival about what's happening tomorrow at the Urban Dairy and the Cheese Toasty Invitational. How can you not be interested in that as an event? 28 minutes past one, you're here on Joy 94.9.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. Joy.
Miguel Maestri is my guest. He is, of course, from The Living Room on Channel 10. You mentioned you've now got an import-export business. I think it's Maestri Fine Foods.
Maestri Family Foods, yeah.
So you're importing foods from Spain?
From Spain. So my dad works as the main person overseas, and we have like a range of paella kits. We have sangria. We have the real products from Spain, manchego cheese. We just launched four different cheese. Murcia Albino, the goat cheese with the red wine. We got semi-curado cheese. We even have like a lactose-free product from the south of Spain. Oh, fantastic. Really, really good.
Sorry,
with flavor.
He's clearly seen my face.
I know, you still see it. It's like, oh, lactose-free. But it's a big part of, you know, I have a dream once to bring a little bit of Spain in every Australian home. And this is, in this country is so beautiful, the dreams do come
true. And I imagine you can't do that physically, so you've got to do it with your food.
Yeah, so it's, if, you know, I get photos, people send me, you know, a photo, I just cook your paella tonight. And that, for me, very powerful. That's more powerful than cook for 300 people in the restaurant. It's a big picture and helping, you know, my country and putting a little bit of Spain in Australia.
Where did your love of food come from? How did you start? Was it a grandmother who had you by her knee, pulling the apron strings? You know, so many chefs have romantic stories, and I'm curious about yours and how you came to kitchens.
You would not believe what was the detonant of like the career.
Excellent.
You would not believe it. So I wanted to become a chef. I love my grandmother. Have a great farm. My mom is a good cook. I wanted to cook, but my mom wanted me to study a degree, so I do something useful with my life. So my brothers, they got a degree, and I obviously wanted to be a chef, so I wanted to prove everybody wrong, and I went overseas when I was 18, and I became a chef in the UK.
Were you in Scotland?
Yeah, I didn't speak one word of English.
That's why it's so hard to understand.
That's why I learned English in a Scottish kitchen.
Oh, good Lord.
And I left with nothing, just like a suitcase full of dreams and a really big smile and really happy to just do what I wanted to do. And that was a long time ago. I was 18, I'm 36 now. I live in Australia. Look at the way it's been, just full of surprises.
Has that been the key to your success? And I don't want to disrespect your ability, but has having, because you have a personality and you have that great big smile, has that made things easier for you? Has it opened doors for you?
Well, I think the point of difference, I think it's out there 1,000 chefs, 10,000 chefs, 100,000 chefs better than me. But I believe, you know, I love what I do, and that relationship of love of what I do, and don't be scared in the camera to transmit that love to people at home, is helping me a lot. I've never been shy. I don't know what it feels to be in front of 1,000 people and being shy or something. And I think that's my biggest strength. I love cooking. I don't think I'm a great chef. I think I'm just a really humble, simple guy that likes basic Spanish cuisine. I work in top restaurants. I work in normal bistros. I've been in El Bulli with Fern Adrià. I've been as the best. And I've been, you know, in a normal place doing garlic prawns. So I don't think of myself as a, you know, I'm the best. I never think like that. But I love people. And that's the key, I think, the communication with people. Surprisingly, nobody understands anything I'm saying. Communication is the key of success.
It's actually very easy to understand you, because you there's so much passion in, and it's, I've had this related to me by a couple of other people. When you hear somebody talk about what it is that they love, that thing that just gets them out of bed in the morning, there is a different tone in your voice when you talk about food. Perhaps when, as if you talk about, you know, driving a car or
love, like you're driving.
Yeah. You'll leave my driving out of this, please. My driving has nothing to do with this conversation at all. So there is a very clear passion or a very clear desire to express your love of what you do through what you do. Has having children changed that for you?
Oh, like, I just, you know, I'm learning by the day. Like, I have my kids. I never thought I was ready to have kids. I got a 4-year-old daughter that is already telling me what to do.
She's telling you about ingredients.
Yeah,
you know?
I used to run a kitchen with 12 chefs, and everybody say, yes, chef. And now I go home, and I am nobody. My daughter will tell me what to do. And I got Morgan, is 18 months. And yeah, having kids is sort of way helping me to be more responsible and more conscious about life. But it's bringing me to be a little bit more of a kid than what I was before. So it's keeping me quite young, and I quite like it.
You were telling me a story earlier about your wife making pizza on a pre-prepared, yeah, pita bread, and your 4-year-old.
So we make the dough. Yeah. So we make the dough from scratch. So I get Claudia, we get the flour, the yeast, and we'll mix it all together, put olive oil, and we let it rise. And Claudia learned all that from scratch. So I go away for the living room for a weekend, and Sasha cook a pizza for Claudia. And use a pita bread, put some tomato sauce, and put some cheese. And Claudia say, Papa makes this much fresher, and I get to roll the pizza, and it doesn't have any olive oil. And Sasa is looking at me thinking, you just created this monster. What are
you
doing?
Yeah. Are you setting Claudia and your son to a lesser degree up now for their future?
Yeah, well, I think cooking is a very important part of who we are. And you are what you eat. So we need to start loving good food, and nothing that comes from your really early ages. Mm. So if you don't have that culture and that education or love food, you don't get told that when you're little, you will never have it. So I'm trying to make sure that they like to eat good things, that they respect food, that they don't take it for granted. And when they have something nice, they really embrace it.
Do you have a garden in your house where you grow vegetables?
Yeah, I got like a heap of lemons. I'm quite boring. I got lemons, tomatoes. I love like fresh herbs. Yeah. So I got lots of tarragon, rosemary, heap of parsley. I'm the kind of guy like cooking something, and I go out, just get a handful and just put it in. Oh, I love that. That's like great.
Well, that's how we should be doing it. That's how it's been done for millennia. So it makes perfect sense.
I'm dying to have a chicken, but my wife hates it.
Chickens?
I love to have chickens in the house.
I can't get fresh eggs.
No, Sasa would not handle it. It'll be doing poo-poo in the deck.
That's the problem you have living on the very fancy North Shore. Let's talk a little bit. So the Grampians Grape Escape, you're the ambassador chef for the festival in 2016, the 25th Grampians Grape Escape. Why did you say yes to going out to Central Victoria?
I'm so happy. First thing, I'm so happy that I got to do a show that is the same age as me. 25 years old.
Correct.
This is
yes,
great.
Yeah.
This is one of the great things. We just feel really identified with each other. But I love doing live cooking demonstration. It's my passion. I love people. And what I say yes is because I know it's a lot of very passionate people like me. They're going to be there. It's a big thing to help as well the area, to bring people from Melbourne that stop going for holidays to Bali and to places they're not really that great, and just appreciate how good is the Victoria country and just enjoy the best Shiraz, or enjoying like the sheep's milk yogurt, or enjoy the producers that they're telling you eat this, eat that. That's priceless. And you know, just driving for 3 hours and feeling that, you know, country feeling. So I say yes because I feel very identified with this kind of events.
Yeah,
I feel that I can do something funny, and through something funny people can get a message. I think a laugh is a very powerful weapon. You know, I think the 100 grams of sugar, 100 grams of this, and everybody falling asleep is not good.
No.
I think the message of cooking needs to be vibrant, needs to be crazy, needs to be loud, so people take it home and they remember it. And I love these cooking demonstrations because I could do like a live cooking demo, blindfold myself, trying to make a mayonnaise with four people, make a mess, and people remember that's how you do a mayonnaise.
Mm. It's also how you're giving people experiences that they're not going to have anywhere else.
And remember it, like, it's memories. You know, food creates memories, and we have shows like this. In Australia, we're very lucky. We do a lot of regional cooking. And if we can create, you know, a habit of people every year to know that this is the weekend, this is where we had to go, is good for everyone.
Mm.
And serious cooking, there's a lot of serious cooking out there.
There's too much serious cooking.
Serious cooking is like, oh, really? Like, it's so much serious cooking you can have. So it's a lot of serious things in life already to make cooking a serious thing.
Well, we've got to pay tax, and we've got to...
And that's very serious.
pay a mortgage, and we've got to do all that. There is a lot of serious stuff. And I think being able to be a part of something where you can enjoy, as you do, you know, an interaction with somebody that you only see on TV. And for many people, that's, you know, you could be the highlight of their month, their year, their life.
But you break the ice. What I love the most is you break the TV is in front of you. When some people watch in the living room, is a TV in front of them. When you're in a live cooking demonstration, that's like the real arena. That's like where the gladiator go outside and all the people is there screaming. And that's when you get to feel what people think about you, how they approach your food, and how they, some people really, you make the day. You get some guy, I always say, who is the worst cook in the audience? And it's like four or five ladies that really want to go and say, me. And they're like,
him.
And so I choose the guy who's hiding in the corner and never cook anything. And get that guy that's very bad talking to people, and cook a mayonnaise or cook anything, a paella. And that second when you see the face of somebody, really, that's worth the whole world for me, and that's what I do it.
Is there anything that you're scared of, apart from my driving?
I'm scared of your driving pretty much.
Most people are.
It's pretty full on for everybody's listening. I think Biggs will be rally driving, maybe. Should be applying. Him and Grand Denias will have a team together. Thing that scared me the most is lose the people I love. Like, I'm not scared of anything. The older I'm getting, the more, you know, the more protective of my people. The thing that scares me the most is don't be able to provide for that people I care. Everything else, you know, I'm not scared. I've been jumping in South Africa with the sharks, or in North Territory with a huge crocodile, and all the crazy things that we do with the living room. But the people I love, I'm very scared. You know, lose them. My mom and dad lives very far away, so I call them every day, and I'm very scared of that.
Call your parents every day.
Yeah. Speaking, when I'm driving to work, I put them in FaceTime, and my dad will be always calling in the wrong time. So it'll be like 3 o'clock in the morning, and my dad is in his pajamas. He's like, what are you talking about? I'll tell you a funny story, please. You know, in the loggies, this year in the loggies, you're talking about the loggies, I got my dad in Skype.
Yep.
So the loggies are in the afternoon. So that's just in the morning in Spain. And my dad just got out of bed in his undies. So, you know, it's summer in Spain,
it's warm, yeah.
You know, Spanish man, hairy chest, happy man. So, and I'm walking in the red carpet with my mobile so my dad can see what's happening. And as soon as you walk in the lobby, it's that media wall when everybody's taking photos. And I hear one of the photographers, who is that naked man in his undies? Because I had the phone looking at outside, my dad was in his undies.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is hilarious. We all like to leave a legacy, and I wonder what do you want to be your legacy? So you've been a chef and you've inspired other people to cook. You've got two beautiful children. You have a business that allows you the freedom to do what you want to do. You have a highly successful TV show. What do you, when you, in a long time away because you're only 25, but when you shuffle off, when you shuffle off, what do you want people to sort of look back and remember you for?
Oh, I never look at life in that way. I'm just, you know, I'm not really, I don't believe in greatness. I don't think, you know.
I'm not suggesting greatness. We all have something that is going to be our legacy.
Oh, I want my kids to remember me like the way, you know, the way that was there for them. And it was then supporting them. And it was along the way, you know, helping them to have a beautiful life. I don't really believe in, you know, it's, you know, I don't see life as that. I just live, you know, like in the moment. I never have that really deep thoughts of future. I don't think of people. Remember me, I'm just a Spanish chef that lives in Australia. I'm just really like, I don't see myself. I hope everybody remembers me in the way that, you know, Miguel was always there for me. And, you know, I'm trying to be anywhere else and nobody
you
else.
You want to be remembered as somebody who's kind.
Yeah, somebody very simple. Yeah. No, as a, don't ever say that word as a celebrity chef. That's going to make me puke.
I call you all food media personalities because celebrity chef is oxymoronic for me. You're cooking food. You're not performing brain surgery.
It's terrible.
And I know that there are some of your
lives.
I know that there's some of your peers because there's what 20 of you that.
It's very few of us in this industry. You know, very few that does the job that we do.
And so you know, obviously the three boys from MasterChef.
Yeah.
The other two from My Kitchen Rules. Maggie's doing something with Matt on baking.
Yeah, you got to get bake off.
Fastenage is doing MKR now with Rachel Koo.
Yeah. It's a little circle.
Who else is there?
You got SBS, you got all the Shane and Peter Kurubita, and you got Luke Nguyen, that does a great job as well, and, you know, Adam Liao as well, working SBS. Well,
you're technically a chef.
You know, it's people that work in the industry, you know, so.
So it's quite a small pool. I guess you add Karen Martini to the mix because she's doing.
And Buzz Eddie. You're going to leave Buzz Eddie out of there.
And Hell Maggie, you've got to have him on the list.
Of course.
So there's not a big pool of you, I guess.
It's very few. And
Lindy Milan, we can't forget Lindy.
Oh, please. You know?
She'll kill us.
I know, but like, it's a strong character as well. You know, I met Lindy many times. And when I first met Lindy, I was just nobody knew who I was. And she's always been very supportive and respective of what I do. I believe it's a small circle. It's like a little family. And we all so different. And it's quite funny to spend time with each other because we are so different in so many ways. And it's funny.
I can imagine. Miguel, it's always a joy to catch up with you. Thank you for spending some time with us this afternoon.
Pleasure.
GrampiansGrapeEscape.com.au is where you will find tickets for the Grampians Grape Escape. It's on the 30th of April and the 1st of May. Miguel will be there as the ambassador chef. You'll catch him in cooking demonstrations for both days.
Yeah, but if I'm still alive, you drive me to the airport.
you'll get to the airport. Yes, GrampiansGrapeEscape.com.au. You can go to watch The Living Room on Channel 10 Friday night at 7:30 with Amanda Keller, Barry Dubois, and, of course, Dr. Chris Brown. And they're very lovely and they're very garrulous, Mr. Miguel Maestro. Good to see you again.
Muchas gracias, amigo. Thank you. You do a great job.
At Joy 94.9, there are approximately 300 volunteers bringing you over 75 shows, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. That's a lot of facts and figures to take in, but here's one more number for you to think about. 1-300-569-949. That's the number to call to talk to the Joy sales team about becoming a Joy sponsor. One phone call can get your business on air and online, reaching thousands of Joy listeners at a price you can afford. 1-300-JOY-949. That's 1-300-569-949.
It's been a busy program already, and very shortly I'm going to catch up with Natalie O'Brien. She is the CEO of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Tomorrow, you are invited down to the festival hub right down here at Queensbridge Square. You're going to find a whole bunch of cheeses down there. So Hartziata here from Sydney, they're going to be in residency at that ice creamery. There's a ice cream called How Now Brown Cow. There's the Earl of Sandwich. There's a Bananarama Pop Don't Preach. So head down tomorrow to the The Urban Dairy set up in Queensbridge Square. There is also the Cheese Toasty Invitational. Now, this is one hell of a thing. The Cheese Toasty Invitational.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station Joy 94.9.
I am joined by the CEO of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Her name is Natalie O'Brien. You know her. You listen in. Natalie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete. How are you?
Good. Now, please tell me you're standing in the middle of the Urban Dairy that's set up right in, down there in Queensbridge Square.
Can I say that I have just left the Urban Dairy with a whole suite of Gontran Sherrier's bakery products.
Oh, my goodness. They are amazing.
Divine. My favourite has been the baguette with ham and cheese, which I've consumed almost every day.
I ate one of his brioche with a little ginger sugar on the top that was rather spectacular.
Oh, it's just gorgeous. So we've been so spoilt with bakery items, but I am going back this afternoon because, of course, we've had all sorts of people taking over the ice creamery. And, of course, we've got the guys down from Sydney. And the menu, Pete, is just divine.
I have it right here in front of me. It is ridiculous.
You read out your favourite.
I can't choose between the Earl of Sandwich, which is peanut butter ice cream, a chocolate chip cookie dough sandwich, salted caramel, chocolate dip and peanuts, or... Or the Pop Pop Don't Preach, which is a coffee milkshake with Kahlua vodka Baileys. Oh, who am I kidding? I'm on the Pop Pop Don't Preach.
Well, I have to say, Pete, the Earl of Sandwich, I looked around. The ice cream opened at 11 a.m. and yes. At 11:06, there were several people. The sandwich looks absolutely to die for. But I could suggest you could do the Earl of Sandwich followed by Pop Up Don't Preach Chaser. And this is all from Hart's Yard, who've come down from Sydney. And this is their second last day, and, of course, they'll be there tomorrow, which is the last day of the Urban Dairy.
Is this mildly controversial, Natalie O'Brien, with these interlopers coming from north of the border?
I think it's wonderful. We are celebrating with everybody, and it's been so wonderful to have the ice cream makers, the cheese makers from San Fran all joining together with, of course,
I fell in love with those women, those two beautiful women from the Cowgirl Creamery, and we've got to tell this story somehow on Joy, so I'm trying to work out whether I can do that in the next few weeks. The Cowgirl Creamery are two lesbian women who started this thing in the 70s and have just been inspirational to watch and to hear talk. They're fantastic women.
Absolutely, and they were just delightful, and in fact, they're two cheeses. We've got a little cheese fridge and cheese room down at the pop-up at the Urban Dairy, and Cowgirl Creamery imported for the first time in Australia their cheeses, and if you get down there, I've got a couple stashed away
with my name on them.
Absolutely divine. Well, Pete, I can do that this afternoon when I'm down there. I know how much you love cheese.
And how much I love those two women. I have to say, season 5, episode 2, Will and Grace. For anybody who is a devotee of Will and Grace like I am, I actually brought this up with the girls from the Cowgirl Creamery that it was, I think, 1999, 2000, maybe, that Series 5 went to air, and there was a mention of Cowgirl Creamery cheese, and I've never forgotten it.
Oh, wow. Well, so I did tell them. Here in Melbourne, and they, as you say, they're truly, truly delightful. And then cheese just keeps going on because tomorrow night is our last night.
My favourite event of the festival, I think, the Cheese Toasty Invitational.
Which, what else would you want to enjoy on a Sunday afternoon? So 6:30, and we've got Anthony the Maker and Mungo, and we've got Moro from the Independent, Jesse Gurner from Bomba, Todd Moses from French Saloon doing, they're basically on the toast machine doing gorgeous cheese toasties on Sunday night at the Urban Dairy. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
And anybody that has been to Pride Market will know that Anthony Femia from Maker Amonga does have probably the finest cheese sandwiches you're going to find. So this is going to be great to watch.
Absolutely. And I'm running across to Mission Chinese at Africa and doing the 5:30 session. And then I'm going to back that up with coming across for what is the last hurrah for this year's Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. And it's just gone so quickly.
It has. It's been a whirlwind. I want to talk briefly with you. Next year is the 25th Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. I know you probably can't tell me anything because it's all going to be shrouded in secrecy and under embargoes, but it's going to be a huge festival, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, amazing milestone, 25 years. And I think, Pete, you've been involved for almost 25 years.
Oh, I have not. You make me blush. I actually was talking to somebody. I was at the first World's Longest Lunch at the MCG, which I think was...
You were there?
Yeah. And when I was talking to somebody from the festival at this year's World Longest Lunch at the Grand Prix circuit, and she said, where should we have, World's Longest Lunch next year? And I said, why don't we go back to our roots? Why don't we go back to the very first World's Longest Lunch at the MCG?
Well, that's not a bad idea. And I think in terms of ideas for next year, people are bustling with all sorts of suggestions. And one of the areas that we're landing on is what has made Australian food culture is all of the incredible influences, chefs, produce, winemakers, etc., from all around the globe. So that's kind of our starting point. And from there, I think we're going to build one mighty celebration for the big 2-5.
Are we going to have some of our favourites back?
Well, that's absolutely. And it's there are so many chefs that are saying, look, we couldn't come this year, but for the 25th, we're definitely there. So, yeah. And we've all got our list of incredibly favourite chefs and winemakers.
I need to add a couple to that list. We must have Thomas Keller back.
Yeah, he was. I mean, that was the year where it was Heston and Thomas, but as a double act. And yeah. I remember there was no seat to see it. I had to peek in the little kind of movie hole at the end to actually even see them talk.
And the other one that I'm still in love with is Granat Chats, who was out here in 2013 from Alania in Chicago.
Yeah, look, and when we talk about the lineup, it's from the very early days of the festival, it was Antonio Coluccio. Endeared himself to us.
But he was back again, maybe 8 years ago, 7 years ago, Carluccio was back.
I just remember this image of him at the longest lunch with the napkin from the table on his head with little knots in the corner. enjoying the wine. And of course, this year we've had, it's been really popular, the Cascardi brothers.
Oh, weren't they fantastic?
Incredible. And what you can do with risotto when you've grown up with it, of course, they're family farm with all the different varieties of risotto. People just adored it at Tipo 00 earlier this week.
And the godfather of world food, and I know a lot of people are going to get upset with me saying this, but when your roster of protégés includes Marco Pierre White, Gordon Ramsay, Marcus Waring, I'm talking about the great Pierre Kaufman, and to have him here has been such a wonderful joy.
Oh, absolutely. And it was just fabulous to see him in his forum with young chefs across Melbourne. And, of course, you were, moderating in and engaging with the industry. It was extraordinary to see the great Pierre Kaufman here in Melbourne. And I think he's had a wonderful time.
Well, every time I've seen him, he looks like he's enjoying himself rather immensely. So it's all good. Natalie, I know you've got to run because you've got more to do, and I've got to get out of this studio so other people can take over. Thank you for a fantastic festival. It is a huge input from yourself and your incredible team of all bar one women. So we very much look forward to what happens for 25. And you can probably go home on Monday, sit down, and have a quiet cup of tea.
Absolutely. But in the meantime, please, everybody, come down and enjoy a cheese toasty tomorrow evening, 6:30 at the Urban Dairy.
Indeed. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you, Peace. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. That's Natalie O'Brien. She's the CEO of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. I need to draw a winner, and I've had several entries for, more than several, for people wanting to... have a pair of tickets to go down a double pass to the Peninsula Picnic. We were talking to David at the top of the show. Chris and Daniel, you are our winners, who suggest we would need a minimum of one bottle of champagne per person, another half dozen to share around, depending on the size of the picnic. Anyone that's going to share a half a dozen bottles of champagne with me is good. Thank you to Anita. Thank you also to those other people that have entered, all suggesting that three would be appropriate. But I like Chris and Daniel's suggestion. So thank you, boys. You're off to the Peninsula Picnic next Sunday. I'll be in touch post program. Thank you for your company. It's been a very pleasant afternoon of cravings here on Joy 94.9. I will be back next week, of course, as always. Until then, my name is Pete Dillon. This has been Cravings, and I do expect you'll have a good afternoon. Thank you for your time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.